It's Ideasphere with former securities trader Larry Doyle. His book, In Bed with Wall Street.
The Ponzi scheme will grow and perpetuate as long as there's new money that's coming in. But once that new money stops, what happens? It crashes. And that's exactly what happened in the ARS market.
The Wall Street meltdown of 2008 was nearly devastating to Main Street and the financial markets. There were protests for more regulation and oversight. But as many Americans aren't aware, very little has changed. Hello, I'm Guy Rothbun. Welcome to Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices, with former mortgage-backed securities trader and author Larry Doyle. He's worked for First Boston Corporation, Bear Stearns, Union Bank of Switzerland, Bank of America, and J.P. Morgan. Doyle currently runs his own investment practice, and he's written a book, In Bed with Wall Street, The Conspiracy Crippling Our Economy. Mr. Doyle joins me for this program. Thanks so much for taking this time.
Guy, thanks very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
We're going to be tackling over the next half hour a complex subject, but let's do so by starting with FINRA, as it is known. Very few people, including myself, had even heard of this financial industry regulatory agency.
Let me put it in layman's terms. FINRA really is the intersection of Wall Street and Washington. And what do I mean by that? Wall Street, to a very large extent, is a self-regulated industry. And it pays this entity known as FINRA the funds in order so that FINRA can in turn turn around and regulate the industry. That intersection, it's not out front. So it's not as if, you know, the American public, to a large extent, understands that intersection or travels along those roads in that intersection. So it's really in kind of in the back alley, as I would say. But that said, every investor, let alone every consumer, and ultimately the taxpayer in our nation, is affected by what goes on in FINRA and the manner in which it regulates the industry. So it's important that people get to know this entity.
A couple of problems with this, Mr. Doyle, and let's tackle this side of it. This feels a little like the fox in the hen house. You're telling me that FINRA is overseeing the industry, and yet FINRA is deeply embedded in the industry. Therefore, it seems like a conflict of interest.
Well, if you were to go into a children's bookstore and you pick up a copy of The Fox in the Hen House and you open it up, and you'd probably see the letters FINRA. All too much evidence indicates that that is, in fact, exactly what this is. And when I initially looked into FINRA, back in 2009, after reading, you know, some annual reports and looking at their financials, immediately I was just struck by the massive conflicts of interest. The conflicts of interest primarily being, how is it that Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan can fund this regulator while this regulator would uphold its mandate to protect investors? I mean, that's a challenge that, in my mind, is like, well, how do they accomplish that? So in order to understand that, you know, I continued to dig deeper, and what I unearthed was, I said, wow, this regulator, in looking at the fines that are imposed in the manner in which they regulate the industry, it's regrettable, but all too much evidence shows that they're really little more than meter maids, and we all pay the price for that in the process.
I couldn't help but think, as I was looking at this, it's a little like the mafia in circa 1930 announcing to Chicago that, hey, we're okay, we're going to set up our own police force to make sure that you're protected from the mafia.
On the surface, you would say, boy, it looks, smells, and feels a lot like a racket. And again, I realize when you throw terms out like racket or the subtitle of my book, The Conspiracy, you know, these are aggressive terms, and I don't put them out there, you know, for mere hyperbole. I'm a big believer in you need to present the evidence, you need to present documentation and reference materials to support that premise. One of the most disturbing pieces of evidence that I unearthed was the fact that FINRA, this regulator, let's say that they're, if we steal the analogy from, you know, the Wall Street casino, if they're the eye in the sky, they're walking the floors. But also, over and above that, FINRA has its own internal investment portfolio. And initially, I thought, okay, if they've got internal funds, you know, these must strictly be relegated to investments in treasury bills so that there's no conflict of interest. In fact, that is not the case. FINRA has their funds invested in a wide array of investments across a number of sectors of the market. And I was just like, wow, if that's not a conflict of interest, I don't know what is. In FINRA's defense, you know, they've got an ombudsman and they've got committees, but I challenge that premise.
Well, this is something that we should take a moment and look at. The ARS, that is the auction rate securities that you compare to a Ponzi scheme that is set up by the investing industry. They were deeply into this Ponzi scheme themselves and, in fact, sold off a huge number of ARS prior to the collapse.
Guy, this is truly where the rubber meets the road. And they can talk about, you know, not having conflicts of interest or anything else. The ARS market, and I'm sure there are plenty of people in your listening audience who had exposure or continue to have exposure to these auction rate securities. They were marketed as a cash-type equivalent, a money market sort of investment, but really the underlying, and we don't want to get too technical here, the underlying instruments had these long maturities, so they were anything but a cash investment. FINRA had a position of approximately $650 million worth of these securities, which they liquidated mere months before the auction rate market totally failed in February of 2008. I would maintain if that's not the equivalent of front-running, if not insider trading, I don't know what is, and I have called long and hard for those details of that liquidation to be released to the public. And why is that? Because when the chips were down, did FINRA perform and uphold its mandate to protect investors in this $330 billion market? This was not a small market. This was one of the largest sectors of the market, a $330 billion market. What did they do? They protected themselves. They liquidated their own holdings while the market was cracking. 6 years after the fact, there are still people that can't access their cash. And FINRA failed these people. And that's a problem.
A serious problem when one also considers that FINRA is supposed to be seeing the industry from a distance, that is, an overseer, and correcting these situations. But instead, it's the other way around. And I'm particularly thinking about Mary Shapiro, who was the head of FINRA.
Well, again, what we see at play here is the technical term is regulatory capture. And what does that mean? The regulators, and there is overwhelming evidence of this, overwhelming, the regulators, and it's not just FINRA, but other regulators as well, they end up, the system, the way that it develops, they end up protecting the interests of the industry instead of upholding their mandate to protect the interests of investors and ultimately the American public. And whether it's Mary Shapiro specifically or others, there's a lot of evidence of this. And how do they play this game? Well, there's this thing called a revolving door. And the revolving door is that there are many people who benefit while they're at the regulator from going through that revolving door and end up getting a sweetheart deal within the industry. Mary Shapiro was actually a career regulator. But unbeknownst to probably most people in the American public, Mary Shapiro was one of the most well-to-do or well-paid individuals within the Obama administration, and she had a career working for these not-for-profit regulatory entities. So it's just like, how did she make so many tens of millions of dollars while working for not-for-profit regulatory entities? That, to me, is problematic.
Especially when, if one will take the time, as you have done, one can do so by reading your work, but I think it's going to be an eye-popper for those to see the origins of FINRA, looking back at the NASD and one of the major founders of FINRA, Bernie Madoff.
Well, that's exactly it. And Guy, again, what I did was I watched Mary Shapiro's confirmation hearing to be the next chair of the SEC back in 2009, and I realized after watching that for 90 minutes that those on the congressional committee really didn't lay a glove on her, and I felt we didn't properly vet this person who would be our next chief financial cop. So I did a deep dive. I did a deep dive into FINRA, and in doing that, I actually went all the way back to its founding back in 1939. And I looked at the way that it was founded, the way that it was funded as well, and just, again, following the money, connecting the dots, and realizing that this institution, at that point in time was the National Association of Securities Dealers. That was one of FINRA's parents, had a very, very checkered past. All too cozy with many people within the industry. And as a result, you end up with the appearance of regulation. But as we've seen, we haven't had truly meaningful regulatory oversight and protection for the American public. But meanwhile, those within the industry, you know, have benefited to no end.
In case you're just tuning in, the book we're talking about is In Bed with Wall Street, The Conspiracy Crippling Our Global Economy, author Larry Doyle. You have a website, blog, or anything else you'd recommend, Mr. Doyle?
Oh, Guy, I do, and I appreciate your prompt there. There wouldn't be a book if I hadn't launched a blog. I launched my own blog in early 2009. The title of the blog is Sense on Sense, S-E-N-S-E on C-E-N-T-S. And what prompted me to launch the blog was I was actually engaged by a friend of a friend who had a political-based website if I would write a commentary for his readers shortly after Lehman Brothers failed in the fall of 2008. And in doing that, I was struck by the number of people who engaged me in questions. And I just had the sense that, wow, there's an enormous appetite out there for the American public to understand what the heck is going on here on Wall Street and the ripple effect, not a ripple effect, the overwhelming effect that it was having on American and ultimately the global economy. So I started writing for that fellow's website when I realized, you know, he was really a political site and that I should either go write for a business site, or even better, I just launched my own blog. So in January, early 09, I launched Sense on Sense, and it's been an incredible ride. The people whom I've met, and really just to provide a voice for those whom have been, whom our government and our regulators have failed. So the essence of my blog is all about investor education, investor protection. 3 years into the blog, a literary agent contacted me and said, "How come you haven't written a book?"
Well, certainly one that should garner a lot of attention for understanding what's going on. In Bed with Wall Street, Larry Doyle. I'll have that website posted at Public Radio Exchange as well, so people can link it there.
Got it.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Let's return to the ARS for a moment, because this was this was a huge deal, and I don't know how many people are aware of how massive it was. One of the things you write, quoting from your book, "While violating the property rights of investors and effectively aiding and abetting a fraud, the Fed determined that our banking system needed the capital invested in ARS more than the endless stream of investors who had paid for it in the first place."
Again, that's an aggressive statement, but I stand by it, because when you look at it, it's a $330 billion market. These securities were marketed, sold, distributed as cash equivalents. That, in and of itself, would be a violation of some securities laws, and these people were entitled to have these banks and brokers perform so that when they wanted to come in and cash out. But what happened was, as the credit markets were breaking down in 07 and then to a larger extent in 08, these banks and brokers just totally backed away from the ARS market. Those involved in the ARS market would say, "Oh, this market worked for 25 years, 30 years. My response would be, like any Ponzi scheme, the Ponzi scheme will grow and perpetuate as long as there's new money that's coming in. But once that new money stops, what happens? It crashes. And that's exactly what happened in the ARS market. The banks stopped propping up these markets, and there's evidence, which I detail in the book, that for 5 years prior to the market failing, these markets were being manipulated. And I provide all the documents and all the evidence to that fact. This is, again, a huge market, $330 billion market. The government provided this TARP, $700 billion. The ARS market was almost 50% of the TARP. So could we allow, you know, these individuals to take their cash back? They said, "Well, we can't do that." In my opinion, they violated the property rights of those investors in the process.
Someone savvy with the market is going to respond, perhaps at this point, is the value of arbitration. And I would have thought that would be an avenue worthwhile for any investor to take. But it turns out that, as you titled the chapter, the Kangaroo Court.
Kangaroo Court. This is, to me, this book, as well as my blog, it's all about understanding risk. And where is my risk? And many people will look, they'll look at specific investments and they'll say, okay, where's my risk? But there's risks aside from the investments. There's risks both in the regulatory system, and then there's also these risks that if something doesn't play out, how do I address the problems? For both Wall Street employees as well as investors, they are beholden to pursue problems that they may have through arbitration. And arbitration is a process that is overseen by FINRA, which again I view as problematic. This isn't to say that there aren't frivolous lawsuits or frivolous pursuits brought on behalf of investors or, dare I say, ambulance chasers. There are. But when you know, you look at individual cases, and I looked, and you say, like, this is problematic. I highlight one individual's case who lost his arbitration, and then when he appealed the process, he requested the 18 hours worth of tape recordings so that he could file an appeal. FINRA provided only 10 hours. Only 10 hours. FINRA is mandated to provide tape recordings. They provided him 10 hours of the recordings, and they said, oh, sorry, we don't know what happened to the other 8 hours. It was just like, you got to be kidding me. If that was in a regular court of law in our country, you know, you'd hold up the arbitrators and the process as obstructing justice, if not destroying evidence, and people would go to jail for that. But in Wall Street arbitration, you know, just another day in arbitration. This is a problem.
Well, this is a serious problem that needs to be addressed, and most of us are not even aware of it. And that is the fact that no one seems to be interested in taking on these giants, although we've been reading lately that J.P. Morgan has been fined millions and millions of dollars because of the actions taken over the past 20 years.
J.P. Morgan, perhaps more than any other firm, has been hit with some larger fines. But as I would maintain, in most of these situations, the fines end up being little more than a cost of doing business. There are virtually zero individuals who are held accountable. What's the end result of that? Justice which is misdirected is ultimately justice denied. And what does that go to? That goes to an erosion of trust and confidence in the system, where the American public feels like, you know, there's a double standard, the playing field is not level, and as a result, what happens? If you lose confidence in somebody, you don't engage them. And even though our markets have rebounded thanks to the Federal Reserve's activities, overall investment levels across many market segments are down significantly. And what happens there? That impacts our economy. And that's, again, this is tough to say, but this is the truth.
In Bed with Wall Street, author Larry Doyle. This is Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices. I'm Guy Rothbun. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices with author Larry Doyle, In Bed with Wall Street, The Conspiracy Crippling Our Global Economy. Something you do in your work, too, is draw out the individuals who have been wronged by these actions, such as Joe Scodolo and his ongoing fight. He didn't give up.
No, he didn't. A fascinating case. And Guy, thanks very much for bringing this up, because really, what I wanted to write in this book was people understand, oh, there's so much money that goes from Wall Street to Washington, and Washington sends back lax regulation, and people are like, you know, I can't understand this. So in my book, what I wanted to try to highlight is specific situations. Where, so when people read this, they can say, I understand this, I get it. I actually can point to individual cases, whether it's arbitration or in the case of Mr. Scodolo, he being a whistleblower within FINRA, trying to do the right thing and bring some real transparency and accountability to the process. Joe Scodolo was a highly regarded regulator at FINRA, but who pressed them and said, you know, we need some greater accountability in terms of looking at the finances and the accounting within these broker-dealers. In the process of pressing that case, what did he get in return? He was fired. There are, in that specific chapter in the book, I believe it's chapter 9, I lay out, I don't know, 9 or 10 different stories of these whistleblowers. Because a lot of people in America feel like nobody on Wall Street was speaking up. That's not true. There were many people who were speaking up, these whistleblowers, and what happened to them? They were ignored, intimidated, or fired. That's a problem.
One of them, who is perhaps better known, Gary Aguirre, he wrote prolifically about his experience. Eventually, yep. He won.
A fascinating story. Everybody in America deserves to know Gary's story. Gary was, again, a highly regarded, highly decorated senior attorney within the SEC who was bringing an insider trading case against the largest hedge fund in the market back in 2005, I believe it was. The trail of evidence in that case led to the door of none other than an individual named John Mack. John was one of the most powerful individuals on Wall Street. Gary subpoenaed Mr. Mack. Who intervened on Mr. Mack's behalf? People at his firm at Morgan Stanley engaged an attorney by the name of Mary Jo White, who's our current chair of the SEC, to intervene on their behalf. In short order, they told Gary, back off, we're not going to subpoena Mr. Mack. And he pressed them and said, no, that doesn't work. I need to subpoena him. A mere few weeks later, what happened to Gary? He was fired. Gary didn't take it sitting down, though. Gary utilized the Freedom of Information Act, and over the course of the next 4 years, he continued to go back into the SEC, get the documents, make the case. He ended up presenting the case in a compelling fashion. But what's the problem here? If Gary was allowed to make that case in 2005, the message would have been sent to Wall Street, level playing fields. Everybody plays by the same set of rules. So Gary maintains, okay, we won that battle, but we were losing the war from within. And that is very true. And Gary, he's a modern-day American hero. Everybody needs to know about his story.
Something you've done with your book at the very beginning is a warning that we all hear in the adage of those who do not know their history are going to repeat it.
Yep.
In your conclusion, what you do is write about the reforms, the financial regulatory reforms you recommend.
Yep.
Let's go over some of those most important ones. The beginning is SEC and FINRA should mandate an outline of risk parameters.
Without a doubt. Transparency is the great disinfectant. Investors, consumers, taxpayers, all should understand the inner workings. Wall Street should not be a foreign language or a foreign entity that is allowed to operate in the dark. So I believe that the SEC and FINRA should mandate a detailed, in plain English, disclosures so that people understand not only the investments, the risks of the investments that they're putting their money into, so they can be properly prepared and protected. That's not the way that Wall Street wants to work, but I think that we all suffer as a result of it.
Referencing your blog together with this information on reforms necessary, I want to quote something from your blog relating to the ARS.
Yep.
Ronnie Sue is writing to you and she says, we need restitution. We deserve recovery. We did nothing wrong and yet we're being forced into fighting to defend ourselves. She adds, this is America. How can this happen? And then in the close of your book, one of the things you do is say, all ARS holders should be made whole.
I firmly believe that here we are close to 6 years after that ARS market failed. There is a secondary market for these auction rate securities, but they're now trading anywhere from 20 to 40% discount relative to par value. So if somebody put in, let's say, $25,000, it certainly is not a cash equivalent. they would have to take, say, a $5,000 to $10,000 concession from that. That's wrong. That's the perpetration of a fraud, in my opinion, a violation of their property rights. That should not be the case. So I strongly believe that now, given the liquidity that the Federal Reserve has injected into the market, these individual investors should be made whole. Guy, what's fascinating about this ARS situation is, a year prior to the market totally failing, there was a 50% transferal in investor interests from institutional hands to mom and pop. So the institutions, and certainly along with the regulators and the industry, they knew this market was failing. So what did they do? Sell all these bonds to mom and pop, $160 billion worth of this paper. That is so wrong and so scandalous, it stinks to high heaven. And where was FINRA? Were they protecting investors? No, they protected themselves.
You, in one of your recommendations, suggest Congress compel FINRA to address the questions raised by a number of corporations in their suits. One of the issues that one has when reading that recommendation is that most of the members of Congress are deeply embedded in Wall Street themselves. Their reelection campaigns rely on Wall Street.
Wall Street funds FINRA. FINRA is funded by Wall Street. These campaigns, their primary source of funds. There is no industry that sends more money to Washington than Wall Street. For 10 years, from 98 through 2008, the average amount of funds that went to Washington was $500 million. That has increased significantly over the course of the last couple of campaigns, and I would maintain the reason for that is because there's been more on the line. But this is really nothing more than a cost of doing business for the industry. But we need campaign finance reform. We need some true leadership in Washington, because what is this? This is the stench of cronyism, Guy. This is cronyism. This isn't real capitalism. Capitalism will work if we can get the cronyism out of it.
And it's important to note also a very clear point you make. This is not a partisan issue. This is not on the front of the Democrats or the Republicans.
That's exactly right. I maintain that when you look hard at the evidence, and this isn't about theory or political debate or all the noise, the wrangling that we hear on a daily basis. You look hard at the evidence, you follow the money, you connect the dots, and then you ultimately say, wow, you know what? With only a few exceptions, most of the Republicans and Democrats, along with the senior bankers and the regulators, are all on one side of the table, and Wall Street's own employees and the American public are on the other.
Well, Mr. Doyle, this has been a pleasure, not only reading your book, but to having a chance to converse on this. Maybe we could meet up again and discuss this issue.
I would love to stay in touch with you. These are serious issues. This is a serious book, but it's written in a narrative fashion, so I guarantee you everybody in your listening audience will not only understand these points, but they'll have a real appreciation for them, and they deserve to know what's going on. So to that end, I am truly thankful and grateful for you having me on.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks. Have a great day.
You too. Yes,
bye-bye.
My guest has been former mortgage-backed securities trader and author Larry Doyle. In Bed with Wall Street, the conspiracy crippling our global economy. Check out Mr. Doyle's website at senseonsense.com. That's S-E-N-S-E on C-E-N-T-S.com. If you have any questions, write to me at rathbunproductions@gmail.com. This program is a distribution of Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org. For Ideasphere, I'm Guy Rathbun.